keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves.
What's up, Wisconsin? I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. I spent the morning listening to the Supreme, well, morning into the afternoon listening to the Supreme Court's arguments. So I don't know about you, but the whole freedom introduction music, I don't know, not sitting right with me. If you didn't want to wonk out for nearly 4 hours this morning, don't worry, I did for you. We've got some sound from the arguments. I basically was taking notes the entire time. So, and by the way, I haven't read a single piece of journalism about it. This is all Maggie Dawn. So if I get something wrong, I'll figure it out and I'll correct it. But I didn't want to pollute what I think about what I heard this morning with what other media summaries or analyses would be. So if you're not, again, what was happening this morning was the Supreme Court of the United States was hearing Donald Trump's claim that he should be absolutely immune from basically anything he did when he was president. Now, his lawyer conceded that he can be criminally prosecuted for what are private acts undertaken while president. Okay, so he said, private acts, he can be prosecuted for that. But here's the bootstrap. And this is why it just gets into the realm of the absurd. The way the Trump argument goes is the realm of private acts is frankly pretty small. What are official acts of the president are certain core functions, which are basically enumerated in Article 2. Think appointments, vetoes, acknowledging that a foreign country exists, etc. There's an enumerated set of powers. Those are called core functions of the executive, of the president. And in general, no one has really argued that there should be some version of immunity for those very core powers. But Donald Trump has gone well beyond that. He acknowledges and argues that there's sort of these outer limits of Article 2 presidential power, and even those get immunity. And so here's the trick. Though Trump's lawyer freely conceded that a president can be criminally prosecuted after he's been president for private acts, he argues that you can't even bring evidence, even if it is relevant to those criminal private acts that relate to or are official acts. You get what I'm saying, folks? So in the context of the Trump case, he says all the phone calls to state elections officials and all the entertaining of illegal slates of electors that would deprive millions of Americans of their rightly cast votes, none of that can be introduced even as evidence, though he freely admitted that a number of the alleged criminal acts in the January 6th indictments were in fact private acts. So do you get what Trump's lawyer is saying? Oh yeah, private acts. You can be criminally prosecuted for that. But you can't mention, can't breathe a word of, it has to be, the word he used was expunged. That's a quote. Official acts and anything, sort of the facts surrounding those official acts, must be expunged from the indictment and evidence may not be presented at trial. Well, to prove the conspiracy to engage in insurrection and to illegally put forward a slate of fake electors, you have to talk about what the guy was doing as president, which his lawyer argues is that outer edge of official acts. So the whole thing goes down. In other words, the entire January 6th prosecution will fold if the court bites on this. That, to me, is about as frightening as you can get. Because what the three liberal justices, and I'm going to give Justice Amy Coney Barrett some credit, she seemed to be kind of in the middle here. What Amy Coney Barrett, also the only other woman other than the other three female justices, funny, I'll get to that in a second. Amy Coney Barrett, Justices Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson kept saying, well, what if he's using the office of the presidency, if he's using official acts to commit a crime, to allow him to be in the position to commit a crime, which is clearly that criminal, that final criminal act is the private act. Oh, yep. Yeah, mm-hmm. The framers understood that. No good. That's immunity. And it was amazing to me, like Justice Kavanaugh and Gorsuch. Oh, yes, of course we don't have kings because they can be criminally prosecuted for private acts. Well, if you can't get to the criminal prosecution of the private act because this outer ring, this outer limit of official acts has to be, quote, expunged from the indictment, those are words with no meaning. And it makes me both like sad and angry at the same time. We are going to see this decision is going to take a long time. There are going to be multiple dissents. It is going to be a fractured decision. I think you're going to have justices coming in on all with all sorts of contorted different legal theories. And they will find some kind of immunity for some of the crimes that Donald Trump has been charged with in the January 6th case. I'm going to guarantee it. What I heard today convinced me those six conservatives are going to find their way to dump some of the charges against Trump. So that's kind of some of the technicalities about this concept of immunity. There's this core set of Article 2, which refers to the executive branch, Article 2 of the Constitution, creating the presidency and articulating certain powers. Yep, those likely immune. But even there, one of those powers is the appointment power. Repeatedly, there were questions from both Amy Coney Barrett and the liberal justices around bribery. In other words, since a president can appoint ambassadors and, you know, Supreme Court justices, what if the president accepted a bag full of money, hi, Spiro Agnew, and didn't do it in the Oval Office, did it maybe in a golden gilded bathroom in a Florida resort, accepted a bag of money and then appointed whomever, some friend or family member or the bagger, the giver of the bag of money, an ambassadorship or to the court. The appointment power is clearly a core power of the Article II as articulated presidency. But that's not a crime. We couldn't prosecute a president for that. Oh, well, there's a criminal statute that says that that's illegal. Oh, except that the criminal statute only makes it a crime for the president to do so if they do it in a federal building. Just interesting note, that's kind of a post-Nixon thing. Which comes, I'm going to get all of the technical stuff out of the way first, which brings us to this point that both Justices Jackson and Sotomayor drilled down on. And that is this seeming logical fallacy within Trump's argument. I just pointed out to me why it's absurd. Because it becomes nearly, if official acts include nearly everything, you end up, it becomes very, very much, in my opinion, impossible to ever prosecute a president who abuses the office and the powers of the president for illegal personal gain. Think selling nuclear secrets. And by the way, just on that point, presidents have been operating under the assumption that they can be criminally prosecuted. If you've got the Mitch McConnell sound, this came up during Donald Trump's impeachment. And in fact, Mitch McConnell basically said, I'm going to vote not to convict him of impeachment because, of course, he's subject to criminal prosecution for his actions leading up to and on January 6th. Let's listen to this.
There's no question, none, that President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of the day. No question about it. The people who stormed this building believed they were acting on the wishes and instructions of their president. But in this case, the question is moot because former President Trump is constitutionally not eligible for conviction. I believe the best constitutional reading shows that Article 2, Section 4 exhausts the set of persons who can legitimately be impeached, tried, or convicted. It's the president, it's the vice president, and civil officer.
So if we can, we're going to continue to work in the break to find where Mitch McConnell specifically says, and Donald Trump can be criminally prosecuted. He said this right after January 6th. So we'll look for that. If we can't get it today, I'll get it to you on Monday. But as Mitch McConnell was casting his vote, that's what he said was part of his justification. In other words, the presumption here is that presidents have always been subject to criminal prosecution. Otherwise, why would Nixon have been pardoned? It just doesn't make any sense. And in this complexity, we also find this logical inconsistency, this logical fallacy. So we're going to take a couple of quick messages. This is real short, one or two messages. I'll come back. I want to explain to you all this logical fallacy in these arguments. And it deals with this concept of immunity and the concept of impeachment and how they have to interact together. Because this lawyer can't make no heads or tails of it. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
May the last one burn into flames.
Did you just refresh the stream? All right, we're coming back.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Talking about the Supreme Court arguments this morning, hearing Donald Trump's claim to basically a really scary amount of immunity for almost anything that a president would do while president. Offering the argument that even after the presidency is concluded, he should not be or even have to answer criminal charges. Now, there's a difference between an immunity and a defense. Because there are presidential defenses that have been created by law, by Congress, that provides a president defense to certain criminal claims. An immunity permits a president to stop a prosecution. Like, you can't even bring me into court because I'm immune from this. It stops the process. A defense is created by law. You can still be subject to prosecution. You raise that defense in response to the prosecution. So one of the areas that I wanted to point out to you all is that there's basically two arguments that Trump has been making, right? There's this absolute immunity for anything that is an official act under this really sweeping, broad interpretation. of official acts under Article 2. That's kind of, if you were listening last segment, that's what Mitch McConnell was referring to in part. Then there is a separate legal argument that unless Congress explicitly says in a statute that a president can be held criminally liable, a president can't be held criminally liable. It's called the clear statement doctrine. Here's the problem, and this is from Justice Jackson today. Quote, "So I don't understand how the clear statement analysis even works. It seems completely tautological," which means circular reasoning. "It seems like complete circular reasoning to me for us to hold that presidents cannot be prosecuted under any criminal statute without a clear statement from Congress, to avoid the question of whether or not the Constitution allows them to be prosecuted in the first place." So what she's saying there is, one, you're arguing that the president is immune unless he is impeached and convicted, because there's this broad immunity under Article 2 for any of these outer reaches of official acts. But wait, it says you can impeach people for high crimes and misdemeanors. But on the other hand, you're saying that he can't face any criminal prosecution unless he's impeached and conviction, but there also has to be a clear statement. So what's the heck, what's the point of the impeachment process? None of it makes any sense. Again, the president is for, or the former MAGA president is forwarding two arguments. I am absolutely immune for any official acts unless I'm impeached and convicted. Oh, and I'm also immune unless Congress clearly said in a federal statute that I can be criminally prosecuted. But wait, huh? Impeachments for high crimes and misdemeanors doesn't require a clear state. How does, these things don't make sense together. That's what Justice Jackson was getting at. That's what Justice Sotomayor had also asked questions about earlier in the argument. So I'm going to can the wonk, because fundamentally there's way more important things going on here. It became extraordinarily clear to me during the course of this argument that these justices represented two totally different worldviews. You had the Kavanaughs and the Alitos and the Roberts, who were, oh, and Justice Thomas, can't forget him. Justice bought and paid for Thomas, my wife Ginny, helped lead the insurrection. Couldn't possibly be conflicted. Those justices are way more concerned about a president having to worry about a criminal conviction or being criminally charged. Oh my gosh. That might constrain his or her behavior. My answer to that is, probably a good thing. In fact, Justice Jackson asked Trump's lawyer that very question. Listen, there's all sorts of federal officials that make all sorts of really difficult, maybe even gray area decisions that have life and death implications, and they all have to worry about being criminally prosecuted if they do something really bad. Why shouldn't that be the rule for the president himself or herself? Well, that's not what the framers intended. That's one worldview. Oh, I'm worried that the president might constrain his actions if he's worried about getting criminally prosecuted. That, to me, not going to freak out about that. There was no response from anyone arguing for Trump, or even from even baked into what the conservative justices were saying, that addressed this concern. If he's immune from these things, what prevents the Oval Office from being turned into the seat of criminal activity? Response, well, we haven't really had that problem in 234 years, so why start worrying about it now? Response from Justice Jackson, seems to me that's exactly what's being discussed here. Those two oppositional worldviews, Well, the president needs to act and not be constrained. He must act boldly. The other faction concerned, aren't we incentivizing criminality? Aren't we saying you get a free pass? Shouldn't we be concerned about that? And it does. Here's the point about it being seemingly the women and the men. Amy Coney Barrett seemed to be legitimately concerned about incentivizing criminality. The four women seemed to be concerned about incentivizing criminality, and the five men on the court were like, no, that's fine. Maybe abusing. Now, there's appeals to what the framers intended and not wanting to encourage political prosecutions. But where Trump's lawyers were perfectly happy to say, oh, listen, we've never had rampant illegality by a president in 234 years, and Nixon resigned and it all sorted out and rely on the system, they were unwilling to say, trust all of the other structural impediments and the grand juries and the requirement of evidence in our criminal justice system to protect presidents from improper prosecutions. It's just all these things are completely illogical and inconsistent. We're going to continue to work on some of the sound. Bill from Oconomowoc, I saw you on the lines, Mark. I know you're there. We're going to go to some questions. I'd like your reactions if you listen to it. If you've got questions for me, give us a call or text 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. We'll be back in just a moment. Maggie Dawn, you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, and we're talking about the immunity arguments being made this morning for many hours in front of the Supreme Court. I listened to all of it. Ugh. Little bit disconcerted by what I heard this morning. Let's take a little sound when Anya's ready, because there's a couple of key takeaways. This decision is going to take forever. Many of the justices were coming from all kinds of different vantage points. So it's going to be slow, which means the odds of any of this, if some charges remain after they decide whether or not we have a king as president, it's going to take a while. That's thing one. Thing two, I guarantee you that there will be a likely, not guarantee, I'm going to put it at like 70-30, likely, that the six conservatives on the court, with not a single liberal joining them, the six bought and paid for justices, the kangaroo portion of the Supreme Court, will remand down to the trial court to have a factual hearing about what are official acts versus private acts. That'll suck up a whole bunch more time. So we as American people will be denied a presentation of the evidence before we all have to go into the voting booth and vote. That's thing two. Thing three is, again, this clear worldview divide. And I probably can't express it better than some of the justices themselves did. Let's just listen to some of the Q&A that we've got that Anya was kind enough to pull. Let's start with, this is going to be cut 8A. This is Justice Kagan questioning Trump's lawyer, a guy by the name of Sauer.
If a president sells nuclear secrets to a foreign adversary, is that immune? That sounds like similar to the bribery example, likely not immune. Now, if it's structured as an official act, he would have to be impeached and convicted first before.
What does that mean if it's structured as an official act?
Well, I don't know in the hypothetical whether or not that would be an official act. You'd probably have to have more details to apply the Blazing Game analysis or even the Fitzgerald analysis that we've been talking about.
Yeah, so we have to figure out if it's okay for a president to sell nuclear secrets, and maybe it is, and that's he's immune from that. It's cool, and yes, that's actually the way this guy sounds.
When did Steve-O get his law degree?
I know.
Didn't catch that on the updates.
And changed his name to Sauer and got law degree, and now argues before the Supreme Court. Let's listen to 8B again. This is Kagan and Sauer. Here's another hypo.
How about if a president orders the military to stage a coup?
I think that, as the Chief Justice pointed out earlier, where there is a whole series of, sort of guidelines against that, so to speak, like the UCMJ prohibits the military from following a plainly unlawful act. If one adopted Justice Alito's test, that would fall outside. Now, if one adopts, for example, the Fitzgerald test that we advanced, that may well be an official act, and he would have to be, as I'll say in response to all these kinds of hypotheticals, has to be impeached and convicted before he can be criminally prosecuted. But I emphasize to the court that—
Well, he's gone. Let's say this president who ordered the military to stage a coup. He's no longer president. He wasn't impeached. He couldn't be impeached. But he ordered the military to stage a coup, and you're saying that's an official act.
I think it would depend.
That's immune.
I think it would depend on the circumstances whether it was an official act. If it were an official act, again, he would have to be.
I mean, it sounds icky, does it not? And I love this because Justice Kagan actually ends up asking him that. This is cut 8C.
Well, what does that mean? Depend on the circumstances. He was the president. He is the commander in chief. He talks to his generals all the time. And he told the generals, I don't feel like leaving office. I want to stage a coup. Is that immune?
If it's an official act, there needs to be impeachment and conviction beforehand because the framers viewed the that kind of
if
very
it's an
low
official
risk.
Act, is it an official act?
If it's an official act, it's impeachment.
Is it an official act?
On the way you've described that hypothetical, it could well be. I just don't know. You'd have to, again, it's a fact-specific, context-specific determination.
That answer sounds to me as though it's like, yeah, under my test, it's an official act, but that sure sounds bad, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly sounds very bad, and that's why the framers have... And that's why the framers have a whole series of structural checks that have successfully, for the last 234 years, prevented that very kind of extreme hypothetical.
Okay, but like almost didn't this one time on January 6th? Like this is the whole freaking point. So this absurdity is happening. These six, five mostly men keep saying, oh, well, nothing really bad's happened yet. So what's the problem? You know, the Uniform Code of Military Justice, which prevents anybody in the military from following what is an unlawful order. Well, aren't you just saying that it's actually a lawful order because the president gave it and that makes it lawful? You know, unless he actually is subject to the laws of the country. It's very scary. And so they're arguing, Trump is arguing like, oh, it's fine because there's all these structural protections. And the DOJ is saying, well, what are you talking about? Let our legal system proceed. This is the very point. There are structural protections for criminal defendants within our legal system. And it is probably one of the most disgusting, alarming things I have ever heard from the Supreme Court. These five men basically throw out and just go, oh, well, you know, grand juries will indict a ham sandwich. That's not a big deal. You know, yes, and this is Justice Alito towards the end of the arguments today. He goes, well, yes, the vast majority of people that work in the Department of Justice are honorable and they work within their oaths and they're objective. But, you know, there's those few times when, you know, there's bad apples. I would challenge anybody to go find Justice Roberts, Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, Alito, or Thomas ever before when they've got a criminal defendant before them being like, oh, well, you know, all those due process and notice and, you know, all that stuff that protects criminal defendants. Pshaw, you shouldn't rely on that. They just toss away all of those structural protections that the prosecution is saying, yes, he has protections because we have a justice system and a system of laws, and he gets to make arguments and challenge witnesses and test evidence, and a grand jury has to find probable cause, and the DOJ constricts very rigidly when they will even think of criminal prosecutions when it deals with presidential powers. There's a whole enormously technical set of arguments about that. It will put you to sleep for legal wonks. It's very interesting. It's basically, if it raises a clear constitutional question, you have to reach this higher standard. It's all from the Office of Legal Counsel within the Department of Justice. I'll save you all that. But the point is, like, oh, yes, well, the structure that protects a president as a criminal defendant, that doesn't mean anything. But, hey, we can give him immunity because there's other structures that protect our democracy. All due respect, what about what just happened? 234 years, maybe things have been pretty good. But aren't we at the precipice? Shouldn't we be concerned now? It's the whole point. And I think, Anya, you were able to find this sound we were looking for. Thanks so much for digging around for it during our little break there. Let's take a listen. Because, again, if we've got the right one, this is Mitch McConnell basically saying, we don't have to convict Donald Trump of his impeachment for trying to overthrow our democracy because he's, of course, subject to criminal prosecution, which we've all assumed all presidents are from time immemorial.
There's no question. None. That President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of the day. No question about it. The people who stormed this building believed they were acting on the wishes and instructions of their president.
We'll keep looking, not quite it. So, again, the point can be made without Mitch McConnell actually saying it, because why was Nixon pardoned if that wasn't the case? Justice Jackson asked Donald Trump that very question. The potential for criminal liability, if it's taken off the table, wouldn't there be significant risk that future presidents would be emboldened to commit crimes with abandon while they're in office? We're having this debate because the DOJ has said consistently that presidents may be prosecuted. Presidents from the beginning of time have understood that that is a possibility. That might be what has kept this office from turning into the kind of crime center that I'm envisioning. In other words, all of your calling to the 234 years of, hey, it hasn't been a problem, is because the very threat of criminal prosecution has always been presumed to exist. Now you're saying get rid of it. You're changing this. You're asking the court to announce a new immunity rule, and that will change the incentive structure. She goes on, but once we say no liability, Mr. President, you can do whatever you want, I'm worried that we would have a worse problem than the problem of a president feeling constrained to follow the law while he is in office. Trump's lawyer's response, well, this is the regime we've operated under for 234 years. That doesn't respond to the question. And that is the root of the problem here. A few other surprising tidbits, and then we're going to go to the phones. The conservatives seemed utterly unconcerned with the idea that there are lawful mechanisms for presidents to bring forward legal challenges or to ask courts to make the law clear. They seemed totally unconcerned that impeachment and conviction would be very unlikely at the end of a president's term if he goes on sort of a crime spree because the person's leaving office. And they seem utterly unconcerned that a president would basically just pardon himself at the end of every term. Well, I'll do whatever I want, then I'll issue a bunch of pardons. The response to that has been, oh, well, the court has never actually ruled on self-pardons, so there's risk there. Not if he's immune, huh? And the majority magically seems to be unconcerned with the fact that the framers could have actually written immunity into the Constitution and elected not to do so. Oh, there goes that whole textualism thing. It's disturbing. Gene, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. Welcome. What do you have to say this afternoon?
Well, thank you so much for going over this, Maggie. I was thinking I was losing my mind because I was watching, taking notes, because I do that with a lot of the hearings and things. And I thought, what in the world's going on here? Because, you know, they were trying to present their reasoning and things when the second guy came up, and he was trying to tell why this isn't, you know, a situation that they're trying to portray, you know, like this wasn't in his official duty. He was doing it on the side, you know. He was, you know, and the lawyers he had were not working at the Capitol, and he was.
Yeah, this is Gene, you're 100% right. So this is the distinction. The DOJ is saying, like, listen, all of this was private action. He was talking to private lawyers. He wasn't talking to AG lawyers. He wasn't talking to White House counsel. They all said he can't do any of this stuff. He was acting as a candidate, not the president. Why are we having this discussion? Well, see my first segment today, because Trump's defense is bootstrapping to this outer limit of official acts, and therefore you expunge all of that and those that bits of evidence and all those allegations from the criminal complaint, and the whole thing goes kablooey. I'll take more calls when we get back. I'm Maggie Dawn. We're going to take a quick couple of messages. Don't go anywhere. We're discussing the Supreme Court's hearing this morning on Trump's I am king claims.
They're watching you.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. We're talking about Trump's claim that presidents are kings, and if they're doing official acts, which encompass basically almost everything, they're immune from that. That's what the framers intended. Don't worry about it. Nixon was pardoned because, you know, whatever. I'm being a bit reductivist. There's some complexity here. But at base, the incentive structure we would create with these kinds of immunities is grotesque. Absolutely grotesque, antithetical to our democracy, antithetical to the smooth functioning of our democracy. This is a bad idea. One of our texters reminding me that Joseph Story, our nation's first great constitutional scholar, explained nearly 200 years ago that the process of impeachment and conviction is a narrow tool for a narrow purpose. He explained that this limited tool exists to secure the state against gross official misdemeanors. Interesting, isn't it? Oh, that's McConnell's speech. He's talking about it. Interesting, right? So McConnell saying that, right, that impeachment's for this narrow category, actually feeds into the DOJ's argument, which is, again, there's this logical inconsistency. If you have to have impeachment and conviction before you can criminally prosecute, and it's only for this narrow category of things, doesn't really hold together, does it? Larry, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What do you have to say this afternoon, sir?
Well, there goes the theory of tough-on-crime Republicans, number one. Number two, you know, the family values and all that crap. There's, you mentioned, so presidents, if this goes through, the president will just give himself a blanket pardon at the end of his term. I got one better. Why doesn't he just give himself a preemptive pardon when he does the oath of office? Number one. Number two, I don't know where this comes from, but, you know, we used to be a country of laws, not of men or women. And if anybody else did what these people did, we'd all be in jail.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Larry. The way that the Supreme Court sort of brushed off the pardon argument is really interesting, right? Because if you're immune, why would you need the pardon? Catch my drift. So there's all kinds of these internal conflicts. There's a really, really important part. This is, again, towards the end of the arguments today. This is Justice Sotomayor questioning the DOJ's lawyer. She's making a rhetorical point. These were largely friendly questions. Here's the exchange. A stable democratic society needs the good faith of its public officials, correct? Absolutely. And that good faith assumes that officials will follow the law. Answer, correct. Now, putting that aside, there is no fail-safe system of government, meaning we have a judicial system that has layers and layers of protection for the accused defendants in the hopes that the innocent will go free. Now, we fail routinely, but we succeed more often than not. In the vast majority of cases, the innocent do go free. Sometimes they don't, and we have post-conviction remedies for that. We still fail, and in fact, we've executed innocent people. But having said that, Justice Alito went through step by step of all the mechanisms that could potentially fail. But in the end, if our legal system fails completely, it is because we destroyed our democracy on our own, isn't it? Answer from the Department of Justice, it is, Justice Sotomayor. You have at base Trump arguing that the separation of powers in our constitutional structure is enough to constrain the president. And that as to criminal liability, he must therefore be immune from almost all actions undertaken as president. That's the nut of the argument. So just trust the constitutional structure. The DOJ is saying, why are we not trusting the legal system constitutional structure? There are three branches, not just Congress and the presidency. There is the Article 3 branch of government. There is the Department of Justice, filled with people who operate in good faith, far more than those who have not. You can't wash these two worldviews. You can't connect them. And remember, Trump wins this case simply by ensuring that the American public never sees evidence presented in court before we are required to cast our ballots. The entire purpose here is delay. What has frightened me even more is that the delay that maybe have been anticipated are going to be much, much worse than I think most of us could have imagined. This is going to be an extremely fractured decision. And now, having heard what occurred this morning, it is very clear that these conservative justices, probably led by these five men, I think Amy Coney Barrett's going to be much more limited if she joins them at all, but these five men are going to create areas of action that a president can undertake as if he were king and accountable to no one, no law, no process. And for the first time in our country's history, our Supreme Court will declare that indeed there is one person that is above the law, and that is the president. This morning was a dark day in our democracy. It saddened me to listen to it. I hope what they decide to do is a much more limited ruling. In other words, we don't have to reach these fundamental questions. We don't have to declare new immunities. We'll just look at this case in a detailed way and we'll send it back down to the courts. That's bad because it delays, but they'll let it go through. Here's why I know that's not going to happen. Repeatedly, and predominantly this was said repeatedly by Justice Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Alito. Gorsuch said, we're writing a rule for the ages. Alito said, we have to think about our precedent setting here. Kavanaugh, We need to be concerned about the theory here, not the facts of this case. They're going to reach and they're going to reach far, and our democracy will be weaker for it. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'll take a couple of commentators after we come back, meeting folks on the lines. And then we've got a special Earth Week guest coming, as we have every day this week. Stay tuned. News, weather, and sports are up next here on the Civic Media Radio Network.